Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Something from the Todd Feinberg Show? Listen to the podcast on WTIC.com/podcast.
WTIC, good afternoon. What's going on with you? All right, we can do it again right here. Let's get this whole Monty Python
thing. Any anti-imperialist like ours must reflect such a divergence of interest within his power base.
Agreed. Francis? Yeah, I think Judith's point of view is very valid, Rafe. Provided the movement never forgets that it is the inalienable right of every man
or woman
to rid himself
or herself.
Agreed.
Thank you, brother.
Or sister. Where was I?
I think you finished.
Oh, right.
Furthermore, it is the birthright of every man
or woman.
Why don't you shut up about women, Stone? You're putting us off.
Women have a perfect right to play a part in our movement, Reg.
Why are you always on about women, Stan?
I want to be one.
What?
I want to be a woman. From now on, I want you all to call me Loretta.
What?
It's my right as a man.
Well, why do you want Loretta, Stan?
I want to have babies.
You want to have babies?
It's every man's right to have babies if he wants them.
But you can't have babies.
Don't you oppress me.
I'm not oppressing you, Stan. You haven't got a womb. Where's the fetus going to gestate? You're going to keep it in a box?
Here, I've got an idea. Suppose you agree that he can't actually have babies, not having a womb, which is nobody's fault, not even the Romans, but that he can have the right to have babies.
Good idea, Judith. We shall fight the oppressors for your right to have babies, brother. Sister, sorry.
What's the point?
What?
What's the point of fighting for his right to have babies when he can't have babies?
It is symbolic of our struggle against oppression.
Symbolic of his struggle against reality.
How did they know all this back in 78, 79, whenever they created this? Isn't that amazing?
That's crazy, yeah.
Wow. They knew that a lifetime ago.
Todd Feinberg, now 2 till 6 on WTIC News Talk 1080.
Good afternoon to you. Absentee ballots. Election rigging schemes. We hear all kinds of language thrown around about elections in Connecticut, but what is the truth? Joining us to talk about it is Dominic Rapini, candidate for Secretary of the State. Hello, Dominic.
Hey, Todd. Thank you so much for having me. I want to comment on that skit that I was listening to there. You said, how do they know about these issues back in the 1970s? Well, you know why? I'll tell you how they knew, because the progressive playbook has been around since Karl Marx in the 19th century, and it's been building ever since. And we've seen previews of what we're seeing today from everyone from George Orwell to Ayn Rand when she wrote.
So Karl Marx was talking about transgenderism and stuff as a wedge issue.
No, so the specific wedge issues. You know, may vary with the culture, right, over time. But the wedge issue.
But the technique.
Yeah, it's a big part of the rules of radicals. Read the rules of radicals. That's a, it's a major issue. And one of the other tactics that we're going to talk about today is overloading the system. Right, we're seeing our system overloaded with money causing inflation. We're seeing our system overloaded with vaccine mandates and labor shortages and supply shortages. These are examples of overloading the system so that it breaks, right? Here in Connecticut and across the country, we're seeing an overloading of our election system. And it's done in a variety of ways, right? One, it's done through by hijacking, poorly written or loosely written legislation. So an example, in Connecticut, you can register and vote on election day. Even though you may not have done it for 364 days, you can do it on that day. Now, that was intended for people who just became U.S. citizens or just moved to the area, but it's been hijacked, right? And it's been hijacked to the tune that over 20,000 people register and try to vote on election day now. And it breaks the system. And we know that because we saw in 2020, almost 6,000 people got to vote without being fully registered. And while I'm sure all these people were, many of these people may have been legit, what happens is when you flood the system is the normal safeguards go out the window, right? The vetting, the making sure people aren't registered in other counties, other states, all the things that a registrar is really good at doing, they can't do that in one day. And so the system gets flooded and they vote. Extending the privilege for voting absentee ballot to anybody who's afraid of COVID. You know, we had over 650,000 absentee ballots went out, almost 650,000 people voted by absentee ballot last year in 2020. Of all the ballots we sent out, 51,000 are missing. We don't know if they were lost in the mail, if they were hijacked, or if the people just decided not to vote. All right? And just
Is that unusual?
No, it's not. I mean, generally, 2 to 3% of absentee ballots get rejected. All right? But that's the ones that get received, Todd. So for 51,000 to be
lost, but this was a new thing to have so many, to have the whole state get sent applications for an absentee ballot.
Todd, we're not, we have 169 unique towns, right? Most of our registrars are part-time, right? Our city clerks, they have lots of jobs to do besides just processing absentee ballots. And so they got overloaded. They were literally drinking through a fire hose. So the vetting of the app.
So are you suggesting, Dominic, that this is part of a plan to make it easier for the Democrats to win elections by overwhelming the system and forcing people who administer to the system to go fast, pressuring them to go fast to make decisions on the votes rather than to wait and go slowly because everybody wants instant results on election day?
Well, it forces people to go at an unnatural pace, particularly most of our election officials who are volunteers. They have no choice. They have to do 10 times the work, right, and get it done on time to process the election. And so, for example, typically in Connecticut, 2 to 3% of absentee ballots are rejected because the voter made a mistake. They didn't sign their inner envelope. They didn't put all their information in. This time around, less than 0.5% were rejected, with 10 times more ballots going out. That means, what does that tell you? That tells the election officials could not process them normally, had to just push them through, right? Just get them through and get them out the door. And that's an example of our system being overloaded. Now, we just had another problem here in Connecticut. I identified, along with Linda Sinkowitz, who's a friend of this program, in Stanford, we found in a special election in Stanford in February, we found that the Democratic Town Committee of that city pre-filled out the information for the applications for ballots, right? They're called ABRs.
Yes.
And what happened was this is a privilege for people who, can't see, they can't write well. So people are able to ask for assistance on their ballots, and that's a form of assistance. Well, in that city, there was supposed to be a signature of the people who assist them with the ballot. Never happened. So we had 1,000 illegal ballots. We complained to the state election enforcement commission, and they said, "Yeah, you're right. They were supposed to sign these that they assisted, but they did nothing. They did not discipline the Democratic Town Committee in Stanford, and so they let it go." Meaning, fast forward to October, we had 30 or 40,000 applications, that's an estimate, across 15 or more towns that were pre-filled out by Democratic town committees only, right? With a digital signature, which has to be, it has to be signed in person, what's called a wet signature, because you have to sign that you help this voter fill out their application. And this illegal process was done with the improper advice or even the permission of the Secretary of State's office, right? And it, guess what? Only Democrats got that permission, right? And meanwhile, Democratic voters unknowingly had to sign an application themselves that was illegal. And this is a big, major problem because this is, quite frankly, to me, this is open partisanship on the part of the Secretary of State's office. And it's inexcusable. The person responsible for this is the Director of Elections. His name's Ted Bromley. He's been doing this for 18 years. He's a lawyer.
Excuse me, Dominic. I'm sorry, but I'm just getting notified that we have to jump off in a minute to take a press conference from the president, which I assume will last for some chunk of time. So
yeah, at least 30 seconds.
It takes that long to be able to have the first word off the teleprompter get read, I think.
Listen, here's listeners need to know. I'm fighting this issue. I'm working with Republicans across the state. I'm working with anybody, including Democratic election officials who are very upset about this, what's going on here. Visit my website to learn more about this issue, dominicforct.us, and learn the details, get educated, because there's a lot more coming at us this year, and we need to make sure people know that absentee ballot voting, which is not even allowed in most of the world, right? Most democracies on the planet don't even allow absentee ballot voting. It's being hijacked, it's being abused, and it's being done in a partisan way. And here in Connecticut, we're not going to stand for it, and we're going to make sure they don't extend this COVID extension again in 2022 as a way to hijack our statewide elections next year.
All right, the website is Dominic, F-O-R-C-T?
Yeah, Dominic, F-O-R-C-T.us. And we've got a lot of detail up there for people to follow this.
Dominic Rapini, sorry we had to cut you short. We'll reschedule you soon, okay?
All right.
All righty. Thanks so much, Dominic. He's a Republican running for Secretary of the State. We're going to go to the newsroom in preparation for a press conference with the president. Stay with us on WTIC.
Something from the Todd Feinberg Show? Listen to the podcast on WTIC.com/podcast.
Oh, sorry. I got bad information. I could have kept Dominic around. I thought Biden was going to go off on one of these, you know, reminiscent of Jolly Ned back during the acute COVID days when he would speak for hours every day, preempting a chunk of the show. That was all for naught. More details coming up, though, on the grotesque abuse of power and wasted money. People just have no idea how... When Bernie Sanders ever introduced that language into the political lexicon of the rigged system, was he ever opening up an incredible whole new world? A whole new way to look at what the evils of big government are. Because the rigged system, you can think about it as just being this simple thing, a little trap door, people fall through. No, it's a distortion in the system that is made a long time ago, most likely, and over generations, illicit, unconstitutional, inhumane, inhuman systems form around it. Like the state of Connecticut, broke, in debt, bankrupt, because of one thing, public sector unions, because of one thing, public sector unions. And everything in the state is formed around the reality of public sector unions. And the intricacies of that are something you can only learn over time as you feel the different pieces slipping into place of this complex jigsaw puzzle of government corruption designed in such a way as to separate taxpayers from their money like they are marks from a grifter's con game. So usually when they speak, they have a lot they want to say. But it's our job to learn. It's our job to figure this out, because what goes on is scary stuff. The destruction, the measurable destruction. And the fact that the system doesn't work and the people who occupy the system have to lie and cheat in order to maintain their existence in this scheme that they live under without us discovering what they're up to. Thus, the Susan Liowitz cut. I'll play it again in case you haven't heard it.
Are tolls off the table?
And look, there has not been support for tolls. So we're going to focus on tax relief.
So can you rule it out, tolls?
You know, we are going to continue to focus on prioritizing infrastructure. And the federal government is giving us $7 billion.
I love that. I think that's one of the great cuts. I mean, not that she's got any cuts at all that are even vaguely interesting. But this is amazing. She's looking to get free of this corner he's trying to put her into, which is a very low-key corner. But still, she's kind of nervous about it. And she wants to escape. And she's basically saying, look, we don't need tolls anymore. Don't force me to answer this question because we're getting $7 billion. We can do whatever we want with.
We are going to continue to focus on prioritizing infrastructure, and the federal government.
Hear the voice change there? Like, this is something. Let's party.
The federal government is giving us $7
billion. $7 billion? $7 billion?
The federal government is giving us $7 billion.
Oh, man. These people. There should be police just to follow around the politicians. Can you imagine? Wow. The stuff they would find. The stuff they would find. All right, there's going to be more on the awful infrastructure bill. Yeah, if you want to talk about that, we can. Give me a call, 860-522-9842.
Todd Feinberg, now 2 till 6 on WTIC News Talk 1080.
Let's talk about all these political shenanigans with former State Senator Joe Markley. Good afternoon, Joseph.
Good afternoon, Todd. I've been enjoying hearing you critique my former opponent, Susan Bisewitz. And
does her squeaky voice, is that a permanent condition, or is that just her thinking she's being a slick performer or something?
You have probably heard her as often as I have. I didn't serve with her, and I really my campaign interaction with her was limited to one
pretty minimal
half hour appearance on the Dennis House show. I'll take her voice as it comes across the airwaves and assume that's it.
Okay.
But you know what? This is what I thought was very interesting about it. That clip you played, it is obvious how desperate she was not to answer the simple question, are tolls off the table? But I love the use of the word look when she came back in that particular quote use. Look, there has not been, you know, whatever it is she said. And I thought, how you say look like somebody is missing the point. But in fact, what the reason they're pressing you is because you're not addressing the question.
Because you're not looking.
You're not looking, exactly. Or you're not giving them anything to look at. And it's the worst thing in politics. I do feel that the one thing that candidates owe to people and the one thing that politicians owe to the people that elect them is a straight answer. Because if you don't give a straight answer, how are people supposed to cast an informed vote? Democrats worry so much about voting and everyone getting a chance to vote. But it's all a farce unless candidates are willing to get up and say what they believe. And why are people scared of that? Unless your whole motivation is to get elected and not to do what you believe is the right thing to do. If you think tolls are the right thing, say I'm for tolls. If you think they're the wrong thing, say I'm against tolls and let people vote accordingly. But absent that information, you're depriving the people of the insight that they need to have.
Well, if she followed such a simple rule, we would miss wonderful opportunities like the one she gave us to see how flimsy her performance is when a little work is required. So she should have been ready for that question, right? That's not a tough question. The governor spent a year. First of all, the governor did a flip-flop after he got elected. He went back on his promise to not do tolls on cars and then went to a yes, tolls for a year, campaigning for them, and then was defeated by his own party that refused to pass them in the legislature. So this is not just a little side issue. This is a huge thing in state politics, and the governor has been mentioning from time to time that tolls are really needed, and the revenue stream for, as they like to call it, for infrastructure is necessary. So now, today, a half hour ago, he issues a statement saying that tolls are off the table. We don't need them anymore. And that's so something productive came out of her incompetence. She didn't intend it, but you could see that apparently they don't talk to her at the governor's office, and nobody sat down with her and reviewed, here are the answers to likely questions. They just let her go out there on her own and to sound that bad. It's kind of crazy, well, isn't it?
And you would think you'd check in with the office and say, hey, I'm going on with Dennis House. He's likely to ask me about, there's a very short list of things he's likely to ask her about. Property tax has been in the news, so that was an obvious one. Tolls is a constant, you know, fiscal health of the state. Yep. There's always going to be a few things you can't anticipate, but you would hope that you'd have the chance to get on the same page on a few issues like that.
But here's what I'm thinking, Joe. I heard this, and I thought the same thing you did. You make a phone call, but maybe they haven't given her the phone number.
I don't know. They certainly seem, you know, they like having her in the photo shoots and all that. And she is somebody who has been around state government one way or another for a long, long time. I would think that if you were a Democratic governor, you could find something to pick her brain on, some use you could put her to. But it's hard to say with governors and lieutenant governors how that works out. It's like presidents and vice presidents. But we've got a perfect example now in Washington of a pair that don't seem to be on the same page either. So,
well, I think they are on the same page. She's incompetent, and he realizes it.
Well, it doesn't. I guess that may be right. That's not the page that you want to be on. Or maybe he's incompetent, and she realizes it.
I don't even know if it's fair to her. You know, it's been a really interesting thing to switch over to the vice president because I like the parallel. She has not been able to get her vice presidency off the ground. And it developed fairly quickly that Kamala Harris was just viewed as not working out as vice president, like a couple of months in. And I wonder how that happened, and I wonder if that's real or if that's something that's being portrayed by those who can manipulate such things in Washington.
Well, she doesn't seem to have, her presidential campaign was a real bust, more than one might have expected. So at a certain level, you say she doesn't seem to have people skills or she doesn't come across well. And, you know, another strange thing that she did, and I think this is something that sometimes you can be damned if you do and damned if you don't. But she went to Washington and basically recruited a new bunch of people for her staff. One of the results of doing that, now that might be because she's sort of notoriously not somebody that gets along with people particularly well. So she may be thinking, I can start with a fresh slate. What that does leave you with is a bunch of disaffected staffers who think they ought to be in Washington, who are very happy to talk to reporters about how badly the vice presidency is going. And I think that she's been suffering from that. That's not to say that it's not going badly. Holy smokes. What could be worse than giving her the border as an assignment? And then I don't know if she fumbled it or they hung her out to dry or what happened. but it seemed like it was an assignment that was intended.
Designed to make her look bad.
Yeah, and it did. So she doesn't seem to have a friend. She doesn't look good in the polls. It's a strange situation because Biden feels already like a lame duck president, like he's like there's a good chance that he won't run again. And of course, she'd be in a prime position for that if she had any popularity. It, you know, usually if you're vice president, what you're doing is going around the country helping your own political party and collecting chits for when you want to run for president yourself. I don't get
doing favors for doing people.
That. Yeah, doing favors.
Yeah, because nobody wants her. Nobody sees it as a favor for her to show up.
Yeah, do me a favor and stay away. So
yeah, Joe Markley is our guest. So Joe, let's just switch it over a little bit. Mm-hmm. I want to get your sense. A new poll from ABC News and the Washington Post this weekend shows they've been doing the poll for 40 years. They have never shown in a generic ballot, that is asking people, if you were voting today, would you vote Republican or Democrat for Congress? And the Republicans are leading by 10 points. That's the biggest lead they've ever had in a generic ballot in the ABC poll in 40 years. And I wonder what your take is on this. Have you seen a collapse like this of a new presidency before and its impact on the party? Does this feel like people are getting too gleeful and counting their eggs too soon? Could this swing back in the other direction? Because every time there's pundits on TV talking, they're talking like this automatically carries over to next November.
Yeah, no eggs should be counted in politics. That really is rule number one. And things could change quickly. That said, I don't see anything happening that's likely to change those things. We just heard Biden on that on the clip that they played at the bottom of the hour saying, you know, we're back. Your life is going to get better. I don't know when I've heard somebody sound more desperate to convince people that things are good when they're not good. And he can say all he wants about your life's going to get better. I think it's going to keep getting worse. What are the big problems right now? Inflation. How is pumping trillions of dollars into the economy going to help inflation? It won't. It's going to create more inflation. And I think there's a chance.
No, that's lighter fluid on inflation.
Absolutely. And by election time next year, it could look. We had this one time in my life. I saw high inflation in the United States. It was. In the early days under Nixon and going into Ford,
Jimmy Carter,
and Carter, and interest rates at 17%. I look back at it and I think, how did that even work? I can't believe that it happened. Which is to say, things could be twice as bad as they are now by next year. And these supply chain problems, which inflation is not going to help because it's going to make our purchasing of the things we get overseas that much more difficult. And I don't see that really all he's doing about the supply chain, this infrastructure, any money that's being spent on that isn't going to make any difference between now and the next.
Well, election. That's going to be out there looking for workers and drive up the cost of workers even more. It's kind of crazy that you would even articulate that. Why is the administration putting so much weight into the basket of, oh, we're going to make things great with this bill? I mean, this bill is not likely to be noticeable over the next 12 months, except to make things worse.
And they're only playing for that short term. They may as well. I mean, I kind of think that if whoever might be thinking clearly in that administration, I'm not sure anybody is, but if anybody is, I think they'd say what we're doing is going to make things worse next year. So let's at least celebrate it now before it all falls down on us. But it's a very bad situation for them. Here's the challenge. Number one, Republicans have to mount good campaigns anyways. If all they do is do the same old thing and hope that the Democrats continue on the poor path they're on, they're going to pick up seats, but they're not going to have a mandate and they're not going to have a program when they arrive in Washington. And that's one of the things that scares me the most. You know, I got elected in 1984, my first time around to the Senate. And it was the last time Republicans had complete control of the legislature, both the Senate and the House. And we only had it for 2 years. And we cut taxes, which was a good thing, but we had big surpluses. The economy was booming. It was an easy call to cut taxes. But we really didn't do anything to transform government because we weren't prepared, and I don't think we had the ideological clarity that we needed. Mm-hmm. And I'm afraid that the same situation may exist now with the Republican Party. Newt Gingrich is...
You're talking about nationally, that might be the issue. Nationally. But before we have to wrap up, we've just got a minute, but how does this, what's going on in Washington, assuming it's a big swing year in Washington, how does that flow over into Connecticut?
Well, one of the most important things it's going to do is give George Logan, and I hope Mike France as well, a legitimate chance at those congressional seats. And that would be great for America, and it would be great for the Connecticut Republican Party. Obviously, it's going to create an opportunity. People are going to be more disposed towards Republicans, but we still have to have state candidates that can transform that into, that can turn that into a state issue and stand for something that people want to vote for. And that's not...
So strong candidates. Yeah. It comes down to good candidates in the end, is what you're saying.
Good candidates, good campaigns. There's no substitute for it.
All right, Joe Markley, thank you for being here, sir.
My pleasure.
We'll talk to you again soon. Joe Markley, a regular here on the program, usually on Wednesdays, but we had to juggle things this week. Former state senator, candidate for lieutenant governor.
Baseball is back. Basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.